A couple of other cults that might be worth mentioning. First of all, there are some interesting aspects to the Hare Krishnas, a very familiar sight at airports in the 60s and 70s with their orange robes and their chanting and their beating of tambourines. In the late 1970s, it began to emerge that elements of the Hare Krishnas were not nearly as spiritual as they would have everybody believe. A fellow named Hans Kari, a German-born Hare Krishna, who, as I recall, went under the name of Hansaduta Swami, he was arrested in Berkeley with a Mercedes-Benz, the trunk of which was filled with automatic weapons. What that would do in terms of helping one reach spiritual enlightenment, I'll leave to your imaginations. But it is not something which is, shall we say, consistent with the transcendent philosophy usually associated with Eastern religions in general and the Hare Krishnas in particular. I had a very memorable experience with the Hare Krishnas in 1981. Elements of the Hare Krishnas had a scam in the early 80s where they would go around and give people, quote, free rock and roll records. They were looking for young people who were not so young as I was in 1981, but who they considered might be interested in rock and roll. And after giving them a whole bunch of free record albums, and I don't know where they got these, quote, free albums, unquote, they would then ask for a donation and begin to hand out their literature. This was basically a recruiting pitch. Well, coming out of a supermarket with a bag full of groceries, I was singled out for such treatment by a vanload of Hare Krishnas, all of whom, interestingly enough, were blonde-haired, fair-complexioned, blue-eyed individuals, a couple of them very obviously German. And after asking me whether I wanted free records, rock and roll records, showing me Allman Brothers records and things of that kind, I said no. As a matter of fact, as fate would have it, fortunately, I was an aficionado of jazz and rhythm and blues, did not generally listen to rock and roll with some exceptions. I listen to a little bit of rock and roll. I'll occasionally play some on the musical breaks in my program, but I prefer John Coltrane to Elvis Presley any day of the week, which perhaps saved me from some interesting treatment at the hands of these individuals. But interestingly enough, as I engaged them in discussion, I noticed what I considered to be a very sinister look in the eyes of some of these individuals. And as I began discussing the incident in Berkeley and other accounts of the Hare Krishnas involved with weaponry, there was a Hare Krishna compound north of San Francisco, which was discovered to have a large weapons cache and hundreds of thousands of rounds of ammunition. I began talking with these individuals about it. They were evasive. And I said that I was concerned because there was abundant evidence at this point that certain cults, such as the Unification Church, were in fact functioning not only as surrogates of various intelligence agencies, but as explicit vehicles for the promotion of fascism. I also mentioned to these Hare Krishnas that Nazism had in fact, in a considerable measure, grown out of a pan-Germanist occult philosophy associated with an organization called the Thule Society, T-H-U-L-E, and that there were definite occult antecedents to the rise of Nazism. And we began talking about Nazism and fascism, and the leader of this group began, I popped a real good pee there, the leader of this group began engaging me in a discussion in which he justified Adolf Hitler, which was interesting to me. So I asked him, how could you possibly justify Adolf Hitler with all of the millions of people he killed? And the individual then said, well, all of those Jews who died were actually killed by the British. And he went on, which again, perhaps when one evolves to the spiritual level of the Hare Krishnas claim to evolve, perhaps all is indeed one, and the distinctions between British and Germans and the Great Britain and Nazi Germany are eclipsed when one reaches a certain state of spiritual involvement. The most interesting comment that this person had, though, was when I asked him how he viewed Adolf Hitler. Did he think he was a good man? The individual said, quote, Hitler was an avatar, meaning a purveyor of great spiritual enlightenment. Again, perhaps when one evolves spiritually to a certain level, matters like the deaths of millions of people lose their earthly significance, and the great holy light, the great encompassing light embraces everything, including Herr Hitler under the circumstances. But I found it disturbing and indicative to me that there were some very untranscendental elements associated with the Hare Krishnas. One of the most interesting apparent uses of mind control by elements of our national security establishment, to me, involves certain satanic cults, which appear to have been used as fronts by the military and or intelligence agencies. In a miscellaneous archive series called The Ultimate Evil, subtitled Mind Control, Satanism, Mind Control, and the U.S. National Security Establishment, I discuss not only the Temple of Set, a satanic cult in San Francisco, which was headed up by then Lieutenant Colonel Michael Aquino. It's now my understanding, I may be wrong, that Aquino has been promoted to general. Aquino was one of the U.S. Army's top psychological warfare experts, held a top secret clearance, which is not actually that high a security clearance, but he was the head of this organization. And one of the interesting things about the Temple of Set, they were implicated, though never indicted or convicted, of involvement in the Presidio child molestations, which emerged in 1988. Large numbers of children at daycare centers at the Presidio in San Francisco were found to have been, they claimed that they had been sexually molested. They were found to carry chlamydia, a venereal infection, which is not generally very common in preschool children. And they claimed that they had been molested. One of the children who had been so molested identified Colonel Aquino as her molester. However, he successfully escaped indictment. He was never indicted, let alone convicted of that. Interestingly enough, the Temple of Set rituals involved many of the same occult rituals which had figured prominently in the Third Reich. The Colonel Aquino performed an occult SS ritual, which had been a major element of SS spiritual arcanery at Wewelsburg Castle in Germany, which had been the spiritual home of the SS. He was there on NATO exercises, and he took a slight side jaunt in order to perform this SS occult ritual in the home, what was viewed as the spiritual center of the SS, who themselves were deeply involved with the occult. There is an entire branch, or was an entire branch, of the SS called the Annenerbe, or Ancestral Research Bureau, which was specifically devoted to a study of the occult. Many of these SS and Nazi occult rituals were incorporated into the practices of the Temple of Set. Interestingly enough, Michael Aquino first effected his, by the way, he was a Green Beret too, so he was not your average occultist. Michael Aquino first was introduced to Satanism as a result of his involvement with Anton LaVey, who himself was deeply fascinated with Nazism and was one of, it was reported to be for a long time, one of the greatest collectors of Nazi memorabilia. Anton LaVey, interestingly enough, also had considerable dealings with members of the Manson family, who in the book The Ultimate Evil by Maury Terry were reported to be an offshoot of a satanic cult called The Process, which in my series on The Ultimate Evil I theorize, and I think there's abundant evidence, was essentially a front for one or another of the intelligence agencies. The Process also connected in Maury Terry's book not only with the depredation of the Manson family, but also with the Son of Sam killings. There appear to have been very significant Nazi elements or Nazi rituals attached with the Temple of Set, or the Process umbrella cult as well. There is a considerable degree of intersection between certain satanic cults and Satanists and neo-Nazis. Charles Manson himself, and recall he carved a swastika into his forehead, as did many of his followers, Charles Manson himself is a hero to certain segments of the neo-Nazi movement in the United States today. My theory is that certain satanic cults are used as fronts for intelligence activity for a variety of reasons. First of all, the ritual sexual abuse widely reported to occur within certain satanic cults, and the mutilation of animals, the brutal physical mutilation of animals, also reported to take place in front of young children in the context of certain satanic cults. There have even been numerous accounts of human sacrifices, the slaughtering of babies in front of other young children. One of the things which has been very well documented is that children who are subjected to extreme sexual abuse, young children, as well as horrifying physical experiences such as seeing a rabbit physically mutilated in front of them, form what are known as multiple personalities, the same kind of multiple personality which occurs under the effects of mind control. We took a brief look at that with Candy Jones, touched on it even more briefly with the aforementioned Luis Angel Castillo. It is my theory that these practices are performed, and there have also been widespread accounts of abuse of children, sexual abuse of children at other military bases as well. There was a huge child abuse scandal at West Point at about the same time as the Presidio child molestation case broke. It is my feeling that some of the children of military families are being subjected to ritual sexual abuse and the ritual mutilation of small animals and perhaps even other children, as well as things involving familiarity with excretia. One of the children, many of the children at the Presidio reported that they were being required to play, quote, poo-poo baseball, in other words, throwing human excrement about as though it were a ball. One of the things that happens to children subjected to these things is the ego, the organizing capacity of the personality, much weaker, obviously, in a young child, becomes completely overwhelmed. And in order to deal with these disgusting and terrifying and unpleasant experiences, the child, in a manner not unlike the fantasy life achieved by Candy Jones with Arlene Grant, initially just an imaginary playmate, but then under the effects of CIA mind control programming, Arlene Grant became a separate personality. But children subjected to this often form split personalities. Many of the split personalities documented by psychologists are children that have been sexually abused as when they were very young. And in order to continue to function, they form a separate personality, and it is that personality that experiences the sexual abuse, the mutilation of animals, the familiarization, the physical intimacy with excretia. This forms, as I said, a multiple personality, and those types of individuals, as we have seen, have long been sought for various kinds of mind control intelligence work by the authorities. I suspect, and then again I want to emphasize this is a personal opinion, that many of the child abuse cases reported at daycare centers on military bases have in fact had as one of their goals the creation of multiple personalities in the children of military families, then later to be used as couriers, assassins, what have you. Also, a long-standing principle of political and social control has been sexual blackmail. Just look, and for the benefit of people that eventually hear this lecture on tape, as some will, it is currently February 29th of 1992, and one of the political footballs being bruited about in the primary campaigns has been the alleged dalliance, or perhaps actual dalliance, of Governor Bill Clinton of Arkansas with Jennifer Flowers. The deflowering of Jennifer, so to speak, has become something of a political issue, and if you can catch a political figure in a sexually compromising position, particularly if you can get someone involved with having sex with children, and there are a lot of pedophiles, including among the ranks of the politically well-connected, this can be an extremely effective means of controlling them. There's a widespread market in child pornography, although not as well documented as it should be. The use, I suspect, of some of these cults is for the generation of child pornography, which not only, like drug trafficking, which some of our intelligence agencies have engaged in for years, can provide money for covert operations. If you get a political figure, and many politicians, perhaps even most of them are attorneys, you get them involved with child pornography, or if you get them in a sexually compromising position with a minor, photograph it, you've got them. You then offer a carrot and stick. You say, well, continue to play ball with us, and none of this will ever surface, and you'll continue to move up the ladder of success. If, on the other hand, you decide to disobey our wishes, then the photographs of you and little Susie are going to come out, and that's not only going to destroy your career, it's going to get you disbarred, and your family will probably leave you as well. Most people will go with the path of least resistance, and I suspect that political blackmail is another of the goals of some of the apparent use of satanic cults by the military and intelligence services. Obviously, Satanists, violent by practice, would also make excellent assassins as well. They've also been, certain satanic cults have been widely involved with drug trafficking as well. I suspect that also serves as a useful tool for our intelligence agencies. So those are some of the things that I think some of these satanic cults are being employed for by the U.S. National Security Establishment. Now, we should also recall, by the way, Harry Martin's Zodiac series in the Napa Sentinel, in which he found connections between the Zodiac killings and the Manson family, specifically in the person of Bruce Davis. Now, the last major area of mind control that I'm going to talk about, and I'm going to talk a little bit about its use and possible use in creating psychotics who go off and shoot up a bunch of people, the last major area of mind control technology that I'm going to go into is, to my way of thinking, the most important and I think also the most terrifying, as if what we've seen so far was not only important but very scary. Certainly it is, but what I'm about to delve into is infinitely more terrifying and I think literally represents the evolution of human capabilities vis-a-vis their fellow human beings from a human capacity to that which, as I said earlier, had previously been viewed as accessible only to a deity, only to a superhuman creature. There is abundant evidence that the mind control programs being pursued by our intelligence services and military have gone way beyond the point where actual interface has to take place between programmer and programmed. There is abundant evidence that at this stage of the game, the human mind can actually be read at a distance utilizing the combination of computers and the changes in the electromagnetic field around the human body. The human body is surrounded by a weak electromagnetic field. This has long been an object of investigation by the U.S. National Security Establishment, and by the mid-1970s, there is abundant evidence that this electromagnetic field and the changes in it associated with thinking, in fact, had enabled people to literally read the human mind at a distance using electromagnetic radiation and computers. It should be mentioned that it has long been known to psychologists that when human beings describe the experience of thinking, that what thinking actually represents is subvocal thought. I'm sure we, all of you have frequently experienced talking to yourselves about something. It's an absolutely normal, I suspect, ubiquitous human behavior. Well, psychologists, in looking into this, determined that when people, experimental subjects, described the process of thinking, that the same neural pathways were being activated as when people were speaking. The thought literally is subvocal speech. And this, I suspect, was one of the clues to investigating the electromagnetic field around the human body. That research in the mid-1970s, and we're almost 20 years from that now, has permitted the authorities to read the human mind, to actually determine the thoughts going through a person's brain at a considerable distance. Returning once again to Operation Mind Control by Walter Bowert, we find a description of this technology, much of it, interestingly enough, developed right down the road here at Stanford Research Institute, an institution long involved with the military and intelligence services, not to be confused with Stanford University. Of this research, Bowert writes, "A research and development team at the Space and Biology Laboratory at the University of California Los Angeles Brain Research Institute found a way to stimulate the brain by creating an electrical field completely outside the head. Dr. W. Ross Adey, A-D-E-Y, stimulated the brain with electric pulse levels which were far below those thought to be effectual in the old implanting technique. In one experiment, Dr. Adey analyzed the brain waves of chimpanzees who were performing tasks that involved learning. He established that there were two very distinct brainwave patterns which accompanied correct and incorrect decisions. Building on this, Dr. Adey attempted to control the rate at which the chimps learned by applying force fields to the outside of the head to alter behavior, moods, and attention. Dr. Ady's research indicated that his subjects were able to remember new information faster and better with stimulation. In the vanguard of brain technology, Dr. Ady worried about misuse of electronic stimulation of the brain when applied to humans. Quote, "My personal concern," he said, again quoting, "is that we do it well, that if we decide that this manipulation is feasible, that we do it in ways that are socially acceptable," unquote. In 1975, a primitive mind-reading machine was tested at the Stanford Research Institute. The machine is a computer which can recognize a limited amount of words by monitoring a person's silent thoughts. This technique relies upon the discovery that brainwave tracings taken with an electroencephalograph, or EEG, show distinctive patterns that correlate with individual words, whether the words are spoken aloud or merely subvocalized, i.e. thought of. The computer initially used audio equipment to listen to the words the subject spoke. At first, the vocabulary was limited to up, down, left, and right. At the same time the computer heard the words, it monitored the EEG impulses coming from electrodes pasted to the subject's head and responded by turning a camera in the direction indicated. After a few repetitions of the procedure, the computer's hearing was turned off, and it responded solely to the EEG thoughts. It moved a television camera in the directions ordered by the subject's thoughts alone. The mind-reading machine was the creation of psychologist Lawrence Pineo, P-I-N-N-E-O, and computer experts Daniel Wolfe and David Hall. Their stated goal was eventually to put a highly skilled computer programmer into direct communication with the computer. Their research indicated that a non-symbolic language, brainwave patterns, did exist. By teaching computers this language, the time-consuming practice of speaking or writing computer instructions could be abandoned. Faster programming would result in an information explosion whose effects could cause a transformation of our civilization unlike anything that has happened since the Industrial Revolution. I would parenthetically add, yes, I suspect that's true, but I'm afraid it is going to be a very, very unpleasant revolution. Continuing. Many beneficial effects of the Stanford mind-reading machine may eventually accrue. Physically handicapped people may be able to use mini-computers to interpret signals from their environment and compensate for the loss of some bodily functions. The deaf may be able to hear, the blind to see, the paralyzed to walk. Military applications of a mind-reading machine will someday allow faster computer input and output of information, remote control of war machines, even the creation of animal or human robots to do the bidding of the military. Norbert Wiener, W-I-E-N-E-R, the father of cybernetics, once said that the human brain, while functioning in a manner parallel to the computer, actually imitates only one run of it. Rudolf Flesch, F-L-E-S-C-H, clarified Wiener's statement, adding that it was the computer which had the advantage, since it had the ability to store memory away until needed for the consideration of a new problem. He said that while the machine starts each new problem from scratch, man carries his past with him until he dies. One young scientist at Rockefeller University, Dr. Adam Reed, is working under a Department of Defense contract to change all that. At a 1976 symposium of the American Association for the Advancement of Science, Dr. Adam Reed said, quote, "Ideally, the computer of the future should be an electronic extension of the natural brain functioning in parallel with some of the existing brain structures and using the same program and data languages." According to Reed, within two decades, it will be possible to encode and transmit brain waves from a small device implanted inside the skull. It will be linked by radio control to a large computer with a huge memory bank, which, he said, quote, "will have stored in it everything you might want to know about foreign languages, music, history, and any other subject you would want to add. You'll enjoy instant recall. The information stored in your own memory cells and in your computer will be readily accessible. You won't be able to forget things. You'll also be able to calculate even the most complicated problems with split-second speed. But Dr. Reed admitted that there were very real dangers to mental freedom posed by the brain technology now being developed. Quote, "It is essential that people be able to use them, the computers, for their own purposes rather than for purposes imposed on them by the political structure." I would add that there was a slight factual error. I thought that I had remembered that the reading of the electromagnetic field around the human body came from this particular passage. Actually, that is in another part of Operation Mind Control. It's described at considerable length. Well, and I know that the time is marching on as it is wont to do, so I'm going to get right to some of the applications of this technology in the 1980s and 90s and what it has produced in terms of the human capability to control other people's behavior. One of the applications of cordless mind control, as I call it, is to obviously read the human brain. It is a matter of public record that the electromagnetic field around the human body has slight changes in it corresponding with the human thought process. These can be read. I was told by a computer expert that the National Security Agency has perfected a means of gleaning data from the computer banks of other intelligence agencies by monitoring the changes in the electromagnetic field around the computer corresponding to the information being transmitted through the circuitry. Well, the human nervous system works relatively slowly. Impulses are transmitted through silicon chips at almost the speed of light. If they can read other computer banks through the impulses going through them, they can certainly do it with a human being. Now, one of the implications of this technology, obviously, is the complete elimination of privacy. It would no longer be necessary to have informers, as George Orwell's 1984 had them, spying on people, having cameras spying on people. You could actually read what a human being was thinking directly from their brain. By the same token, it has long been known that microwaves, actually, when directed at the frontal lobe of the brain, produce a sensation of hearing. Deaf people have long been able to hear words when microwaves were beamed at the frontal lobe. It is not actually known, as far as I know, what produces this. It's believed that hydrostatic waves are actually set up in the brain itself, which is surrounded by fluid, and that this is what produces the hearing. Well, that there is abundant evidence that at this point, not only can thoughts be read, but that individuals who are incorrect, whose thoughts and behavior are incorrect, can be punished using microwave technology to produce a number of terrible things inside of the human nervous system, ranging from voices inside of your head, which you can't control, to agonizing experiences, hallucinations, extreme physical pain, all produced by remote control. This, I think, could perhaps be viewed as the ultimate evolution of Satanism. If you wish to torment an individual, this permits you the power associated in mythology with demons. The last element that I'm going to read this evening is, and this is available, by the way, Paul has copies of this, if people would like to purchase this. For the benefit of those of you who are hearing this on tape, you don't know who Paul is. It's Paul from Archives sitting to my left. I'm going to read to you now from a paper called Effects of Gigahertz Radiation on the Human Nervous System. Recent Developments in the Technology of Political Control. This was authored by Harlan E. Girard, G-I-R-A-R-D, of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, for the NATO Advanced Research Workshop on Coherent and Emergent Phenomena in Biomolecular Systems. This was held at the University of Arizona on January 15th through 19th of 1991. Beginning on page 3, we find the following. After discussing the CIA and military's mind control research, Girard writes, "Of particular interest in the light of current developments are two paragraphs in the very last chapter which concern a Boston-based CIA front organization, the Scientific Engineering Institute, which still exists, not so incidentally. The SEI was initially established to do research on radar. In the 1960s, the SEI added a wing devoted to, quote, life sciences, unquote, and hired a group of behavioral and medical scientists. Marx reports, quote, one veteran recalls a colleague joking, if you could find the natural radio frequency of a person's sphincter, you could make him run out of the room real fast, unquote. Turning serious, the veteran states the technique was plausible, again in quotes, and he notes that many of the crazy ideas bandied about at lunch developed into concrete projects, unquote. Just how concrete that proposal to find the national radio frequency of the human and penile sphincter became, Marx had no way of knowing at the time he wrote his book. That book, by the way, is a not very good book about mind control called The Search for the Manchurian Candidate by Jonathan Marx, which maintains that they searched, but they didn't find it. Unfortunately, as we've seen this evening, they did indeed find it. Lastly, and this is on page 4 before he goes into the full account, lastly, I would like to cite another Defense Intelligence Agency report also prepared by the U.S. Army. It is titled, Biological Effects of Electromagnetic Radiation, Radio Waves, and Microwaves, Eurasian Communist Countries. It was published by the Defense Intelligence Agency in March of 1976. The importance of this report rests not on its content, much of which can remain... The importance of this report rests not on its content, much of which seems to remain classified, but in its acknowledgement of a shift in focus in less than 4 years from a wide range of behavior control interests to just one, electromagnetic radiation. The date of this report is also significant. It was published just as George Herbert Walker Bush became director of Central Intelligence. Experiments on involuntary human subjects were rapidly authorized by the new director, but outside of the United States because of the wrath of Congress at that time. An experiment was begun in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada, under the aegis of an American oil company with which the DCI was on friendly terms. It consisted initially of blasting a man's brain with the microwave analog of sound waves for 2 to 3 hours a day. It had the effect of producing auditory hallucinations. For an explanation of how audible voices are broadcast directly into the brain, see Microwave Auditory Effects and Applications, James C. Lynn, L-I-N, Ph.D., Thomas Springfield, in Illinois, 1970. Oh, that's Thomas Springfield, Publishers, Illinois, 1978, particularly page 176. For audible voices and their use in intelligence operations, also see The Body Electric, Electromagnetism and the Foundation of Life, Robert D. Becker, M.D., and Gary Selden, S-E-L-D-E-N. Becker, by the way, is B-E-C-K-E-R. And Gary Selden, S-E-L-D-E-N, Morrow, New York, 1985, particularly pages 317 at Sequoia. Now, his discussion of the technology and methods. A further discussion of events leading up to the present series of mind control experiments will have to await another occasion in favor of a discussion of the technology of which the United States is now possessed. As I have already indicated, one of the principal features of the weapon system is its ability to produce auditory effects or hallucinations. Using these effects to broadcast defeat into the minds of the enemy was a particular dream of General Leonard Perutz, P-E-R-R-O-O-T-S, of the U.S. Air Force. He hired droves of consultants to tell him how to use a microwave beam to implant ideas into the mind of the enemy and, to be perfectly fair, to urge on his own troops to superhuman deeds of valor. One consultant I have spoke with advised Perutz that it is no more possible to implant ideas in the brain with microwaves than it is possible to implant ideas in a computer with microwaves. He pointed out the impossibility of knowing where any particular bit of information was stored. The effect this had on Perutz was really quite predictable, considering the hubris of the man and his access to unlimited amounts of money through the bloated American defense budget. He kept on hiring consultants until he found one who promised him results, knowing that he, Perutz, would be long retired before anyone could safely say his fair-haired boy was a charlatan. The smug complacency of the former consultant I spoke with was equally predictable. When I confronted him with the fact that medical atrocities are being committed on innocent human beings, he refused to discuss the subject with me until I could describe the process to him. Subsequently, I stumbled across Lynn's book on microwave auditory effects. I called the former consultant back again and again implored him to step forward and be counted. This time, confronted with the process being used, He told me that I had to explain to him the mechanism by which microwaves produce auditory effects. Changing tack, I told him that the mechanism is irrelevant. The process is being used on slave labor in efforts to create the Manchurian candidate. His reaction was just as predictable. His reaction was just as predictable as Perutz, given the isolation and arrogance of academia. He assured me that such experiments couldn't be going on because H.E. had forestalled that happening. Excuse me, I thought that was an abbreviation. You get so accustomed to reading about military acronyms that I assumed H.E. was, you know, headquarters something or other. But one more time, he assured me that such experiments couldn't be going on because he had forestalled that happening. He had told Lieutenant General Perutz that it couldn't be done, so Perutz had gone out to fly a kite and forgotten about it. Actually, that is what should have happened. Instead, Perutz turned to a man who promised him results. This man remembered the microwave analog audiograms used by Dr. Joseph Sharp to beam auditory hallucinations into his own head at the Walter Reed Army Institute of Research in 1973. He promised Perutz that he would talk a human being to death if he was furnished with the equipment Sharp had used at Walter Reed, a slave, and personal security. This was the origin of the medical atrocities which began in Edmonton, Alberta in 1976 under the protection of the Central Intelligence Agency and continue to this day. By the fall of 1983, experiments had produced some communications equipment which far exceeded the simple dream of broadcasting defeat into the minds of the enemy. It is not only capable of producing auditory hallucinations, but visual hallucinations as well. The visual hallucinations have been described to me by a German artist on whom this equipment is being used involuntarily as having the quality of 35mm color slides. Besides these sensory hallucinations, the same equipment can be used to block all sensation. It is being used to distort and even completely block all senses. With it, the ultimate in sensory deprivation experiments can be performed. There's no peeking under the electromagnetic blindfold this equipment creates. I should mention in this context that the Central Intelligence Agency now has at its disposal the most evil, the most cunning torture devised by any government in all of human history. It is truly satanic in its moral and ethical implications. It is a torture which is commensurate with the degeneracy of a nation which is prepared and well on its way to polluting all life on Earth into extinction. The torture I am writing of I can only describe as thought deprivation. It is used in conjunction with sensory deprivation, but it is in fact sensory deprivation times 10 to the 10th power. We are all familiar with the sensation of being exposed to very loud noises. They are irritating, and we try to remove ourselves from them. We might say, it's so noisy in here I can't hear myself think. Human beings perceive thought as audible sound. It is something which we hear. We listen to ourselves think. The quality of listening to ourselves think, of hearing our own thoughts, can be extinguished by this device so that it is not possible to hear oneself think. I have no idea how this effect is produced. It may be accomplished by playing a signal into the auditory nerve at such a high power that it does, in fact, drown out the sound of all thought, but I do not believe that is how it is being done. I do not know enough about the physiology of the brain to explain how it might be done, but the Central Intelligence Agency can do it with the mind control technology at its disposal. I would interject perhaps electronic dissolution of memory and the overproduction of acetylcholine might have something to do with it. That's just conjecture. Continuing. That is the bad news. The good news is that one continues to think even if one cannot hear oneself think. Do not panic. There is nothing to fear. On the other hand, our thought process is what distinguishes man from any other form of life. Cogito ergo sum, I think, therefore I am. But cogito is no longer necessarily possible. Where does this leave sum? Furthermore, this communications equipment is able to produce pain, enormous amounts of pain. Pain is only another nerve signal, and pain is applied in great quantities in the torture regimen. Sometimes the pain is specific and describable, More often it is general and indescribable. It is very much like being immersed in water, only it isn't water, it is pain. The pain surges and laps at one like water. I have also described this pain as being very much like having an electric current passing through one's body. It is like having one's finger held in an electric socket, then being unable to turn the current off. Except this torture is used for years on end. A skeptic might well ask why, if the United States has such equipment, it is being used to torture innocents and not Saddam Hussein. The answer is the cowardice factor. It is quite one thing to torture innocents for a few hours a day, a few days a week, and then to retire to a nearby hotel to soak your liver in beer served from frosty mugs. It is quite another to spend your afternoons and evenings in Baghdad, confined to a room commensurate with your cover story because you don't speak Arabic, wondering how soon you will be betrayed. This is the cowardice factor. What good is it to earn big bucks if your life is put at risk? Patriotism? Forget about it. Torturing a man through a cinder block wall is the ultimate act of cowardice. The mere intervention is a reflection of the complete moral and physical corruption of American society. But America is also an intellectually corrupt country. Once the Central Intelligence Agency had discovered the fountain of death, it didn't know how to use it. The best idea they could come up with was to resurrect the protocols of the infamous Dr. Ewan Cameron, substituting the new technology for the low-tech equipment he had employed. Readers who are interested in the protocols of the deranged Dr. Cameron may consult John Marks's book cited earlier. I would interject, by the way, the son of one of Dr. Cameron's subjects who was subjected to a number of horrifying techniques collectively known as psychic driving wrote about it, called A Father, a Son, and the CIA, and he's a professor right down here at Stanford University. Continuing. There have recently been several books published on the subject of Cameron as well. This new interest resulted from survivors of his medical atrocities suing the CIA for compensation. Among the books recently published, I would recommend Journey into Madness by Gordon Thomas. The American edition came out in May of 1990. A skeptic might also ask how it is possible to apply the Cameron brainwashing technique, called depatterning, to an American citizen in the privacy of his own home. This is, in fact, a $64 question with no obvious answer to rational men and women. Firstly, every effort is made to incarcerate the victim to a friendly, or one more time. Firstly, every effort is made to incarcerate the victim in a friendly hospital where his or her mind can be crushed at the leisure of the CIA. Failing this, it is usually possible to get at least a false diagnosis from a corrupt physician that the victim has a potential psychiatric problem which may require institutionalization at some future date. The effort to incarcerate the victim requires the cooperation of someone in the victim's family or work environment. The Central Intelligence Agency uses the term authority figure to describe this player because he or she is an authority on the victim and will step forward at the appropriate moment and demand that the victim be incarcerated or agree with the physician that the victim should be incarcerated. Failing the presence of an authority, the victim may simply be kidnapped and placed in confinement, or the CIA may use unlawful restraint to hold the victim in confinement temporarily. It's not a pretty picture. If all attempts at incarceration fail, or when the victim must be released, then the victim is tortured in the privacy of his own home. This is possible because the effects are produced by electromagnetic radiation, which passes freely through seemingly solid walls. The brainwashing begins by picking victims who are isolated in the first place, preferably living alone, by soliciting the cooperation of the victim's friends and acquaintances. In other societies, these people wouldn't be called friends, they would be called informers. The Central Intelligence Agency then attempts to isolate the individual from people whom they plan to corrupt, the victim's support network. This is done by making the victim difficult to be with. At the same time, every effort is made to make the victim suspicious of his friends and colleagues so he will avoid them of his own free will.